I was saying at the start we're starting a new series on Timothy. So logically I'm going to read to you from Acts this morning, but Carl will explain more later. I'm going to read to you from Acts chapter 16, verses 1 to 5. Sorry, just one second. Paul and Silas went first to Derbe and then on to Lystra. There they met Timothy, a young disciple whose mother was a Jewish believer, but whose father was a Greek. Timothy was well thought of by the believers in Lystra and Iconium, so Paul wanted him to join them on their journey. In deference to the Jews in the area, he arranged for Timothy to be circumcised before they left, for everyone knew that his father was a Greek. Then they went from town to town, explaining the decision regarding the commandments that were to be obeyed, as decided by the apostles and elders in Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in their faith and grew daily in numbers.
Thank you, Andy. Yep, we are going to look at the letters to Timothy. There's two of them, and we'll work through literally chapter by chapter this term. But of course, because these things aren't written in a vacuum, there's always a context. That's why we start in Acts 16, where Paul meets this guy, Timothy, and he comes on the scene. And we're looking at Timothy because he is an example of a discipled leader. This whole year we are thinking about discipleship, mentoring, apprenticeship model. And we've looked at different examples. We looked a bit at Joshua earlier in the year. And now we're looking at an example from the newer part of the Bible, Timothy, as a disciple leader. But to kick us off, I want to give you a question, which next slide will show. And that is, where might God mess with your schedule? Where might God mess with your schedule? For those of you who are quite new to this church, let me explain. We cycle around different questions to tease us, to get us thinking and praying about our walk with Jesus. And we have what we call up questions. They're about our relationship with God. There we have in questions, what is God doing in us and us together? And then out questions, how is God calling us out? And we cycle rounds, up, in, out, up, in, out. And it seems ages ago now, back in the summer term, our last question was an up question. So now we hit an in question. Where might God mess with your schedule? If you make space for God, as Andy was saying with the children, well, where's God going to come in and start rearranging stuff for you? Well, we'll talk a bit more about that later. Paul is on his travels in Acts. He's traveling around churches and he ends up going to new places. And he meets this guy, Timothy. We know very little about Timothy. We know that he's mixed race, Jewish and Greek. And we know that Paul invites him to come along. And so Timothy joins Paul and starts off as his helper and follows Paul on his journey, and they work side by side, a co-worker. But in time, he will become a leader in his own right. And the two letters to Timothy is then Paul writing to Timothy, now discipled and a leader, giving him, if you like, update instructions. And we'll be working through those instructions and we'll learn stuff from those and we'll find useful stuff. But always remember the context that these are instructions given to Timothy after he'd spent this crucial time being a co-worker, walking side by side as an apprentice with Paul in this discipleship apprentice model. Let's go to the next slide. Richard Branson, of all people, has said this. This is one of his pictures that floats around Facebook, and I, I've picked it off for today. He says, if someone offers you an amazing opportunity, but you are not sure that you can do it, his advice is say yes, then learn how to do it later. So, in other words, someone gives you, you think, wow, that sounds fantastic, that's amazing, but I don't know if I'm up for that, I don't know if I can do that. Richard Branson would say, look, go for it and learn how to do it along the way. And that's kind of Timothy. Paul invites him, and I'm sure Timothy was thinking, really, am I up for this? Am I good enough? Can I do this? Have I got the skills? But the whole point is you learn those skills on the journey, discipleship, apprenticeship model. And so that's what Timothy does. He goes with him. It's just the same as at the beginning of this year, we were looking at Jesus the discipler. And Jesus called different people and said, come with me. Did they have all the skills? Did they have all the knowledge already? No, probably not. But they learn along the way as they followed. A Jewish rabbi in the time of Jesus would be looking for people to train up. But you know, the interesting thing is in what they're looking for. They're looking for someone who can potentially become better than them as a rabbi. They're not just looking for some people that they can rub off a few good hints and tips to. Not just looking for people that they can think, yeah, I can teach them some stuff and they'll find that useful. They're looking for someone who, through their training, will one day supersede them and be better than them. That's the discipleship, apprenticeship model. And remember that one of those first lessons from earlier this year, I won't ask you what it is because you also find it so difficult to say stuff when I say remember this and you all like really? Did we learn this? One of those first lessons was see potential. Do you remember? Jesus saw potential in people and called them out to follow. Paul sees potential in Timothy and says, come along with me and you'll learn the stuff as we go. That's the biblical model. It's also the same model that we saw with Moses and Joshua in the summer. A model that we need to learn how to do as well. So lesson number one, see potential in people and call them to go with you. So Timothy goes on this journey. And as he does so, he discovers many things. He discovers gifts. People prophesy over him. But here's an important thing for us. He does that, traveling with Paul, on mission. He learns this stuff. He becomes a leader while doing his discipleship on mission. He doesn't do it in a classroom. He goes out, follows Paul, but they go off to all kinds of places. You read it in Acts. They end up in Corinth, Athens, and all kinds of other places on mission. That's where he does his discipleship. That's the one simple thing I would like you to take away from this morning out of all the good things. Do discipleship on mission. That's where you'll learn. It's a huge thing for us as a church. Huge thing, because let me tell you two things about us as a church. One is that we want to see kingdom life across the city. We want to see individuals, people, groups discovering the life that only Jesus can give. And we want to see that all around the city, kingdom life. That's one of our kind of strap lines underneath our logo, seeking to worship and seeking to serve. Seeing kingdom life appear across the city. But with that, another really big thing for us as a church is that everyone, every member, everyone who feels that they're part of this church can and should take part in that. The seeing kingdom life across the city isn't just for the few special people, for the few keen people, for the few super Christian people. No, it's for all of us to take part in that. But how are we going to learn to do that? How are we going to get trained up to participate in seeing kingdom life across the city? Well, there's a clue in Timothy. He did his discipleship on mission. So we should do the same. Our learning primarily will not be in this space, though good that it is. But actually getting out there and doing the stuff, learning as we go on mission. We need to learn to do that. Because it's easy for us to get our perspective wrong and think, well, it's all about in here. No, it's about learning on mission, which is out there. Our classroom is actually outside. Well, Timothy makes himself available for that by saying, yes, Paul, I'll go with you. He does a radical thing. He makes himself available to serve, to do mission with Paul, to help. But more than that, he makes himself available for Jesus to mess with his schedule and to introduce him to all kinds of new opportunities. Availability. Here in this church, we celebrate, we give thanks, we are so blessed because so many of us make ourselves available for service and mission in so many ways. Just on a Sunday, 70% of our membership take part in making our Sundays happen in one way or another across a month. And then when you add in the midweek activities and the other stuff that we do, that percentage goes even higher. That is absolutely wonderful. We're great with that. But some people are able to intentionally, deliberately allocate part of their week for this kind of Christian service. Maybe they're fortunate enough that they don't need a full-time job. Maybe they only need a part-time job. But they make a point of saying, no, there's part of this week that I'm going to protect from other stuff that is good or it needs doing, so it is available for Christian service, for mission, for volunteering. And that is absolutely fantastic. In fact, I would go further. I would say those people are gold dust. It's so hard to put a value on those people and them being able to make that time available, because the value to this church and to society as a whole is huge. They are more than gold dust. But whether your Christian calling is expressed through a full-time job, or whether it's in part-time work or portfolio that includes volunteering, or in other ways, all of us, every single one of us, face a challenge. And the challenge is for us to not simply fill our time with activity, good though that activity may be, and some of it is truly wonderful, but to not simply cram in more and more activity so that our time, our allotted seconds that Andy showed on the screen, is jam-packed full with activity. So that there is so much there, so much going on, and it could be good stuff, but there is no room, there is no margin for us to simply say, okay, Jesus, what would you have me do? How would you direct this time? There is no room for us to do that. That's a challenge for every one of us. Now, a few in this church do that on a regular basis. I'm not quite sure how many, but I think it's a few. Maybe their circumstances are that they don't need any paid work. They're fortunate in that regard. But I don't think actually it's whether they have paid work or not that's the issue. It's their intention. Their deliberate making space and saying to Jesus, here's some space for you to fill. Lord, use this time as you would wish. Now that is hard to do. But it's so difficult to do for two reasons. The first is what I've already talked about. Society and culture wants us to cram stuff in. And there are wonderful things to be doing. You may be serving, they might be helping a 2x2 parent or toddler or however midweek things or other stuff on a Sunday. There's wonderful stuff quite apart from everything else. Thousands of good things to do. And so we can easily fill all our time with this stuff, which means that there is no room. That's the first reason. The second reason, though, is more subtle, but I think is a much, much bigger problem. And the second reason is that our society, our culture today, simply does not value and cannot communicate the value of leaving space and time. I don't think our culture can do it. Our culture wants us to max out on everything. And it has no value system to communicate the importance of leaving time. I've mentioned that people who do intentionally make time are like gold dust. But normal society won't communicate that. It won't give you that message. In fact, worse, I fear that it does the exact opposite. I fear that culture screams at you that intentionality is of no worth at all. The only thing that counts is like paid work. I think culture screams at us that you're only valuable if you are doing a paid job. And it's a problem. As an example of this, imagine you go to a party and you meet new people and you introduce yourself. Oh, yes, how did you come to this party? Who do you know? Blah, blah, blah. One of the first questions is, what do you do? What job do you do? And if you don't do any paid work, think how the conversation plays out. Subtly, the value system is not there. Imagine you said, well, actually, I intentionally make space and time to minister to people. See what reaction you get. We need a language to convey the value of this stuff. I'm going to use the term community minister. That's a term that I've made up. Well, I haven't quite made it up. I've heard it used in one or two other contexts, not in Ely. Karen and I went to a conference and we heard that term used, and I think I've heard it once or twice maybe elsewhere, but I certainly haven't heard it around here. But I think we should start using that term of community minister. Of talking about people, and here's a definition I'm going to give you, and this I have made up for this morning. Someone who is an intentional volunteer who makes space for Jesus to be at work in their ordinary week. A community minister. Their identity is firmly in Christ, not in what they do. But that identity spills out into what they do. And the intentionality of making space to be available for Jesus to fill. And that will be in a portfolio of things. Some are planned activities like volunteering, whether it's 2x2 or whatever else. Some of it will simply, literally be making open spaces and saying, okay, Jesus, surprise me, mess with my schedule, and bring along what you would bring along. Hugely value. Let's call those people community ministers. Let's convey the value that they are to us as a church and to society. Try using that at a party. I'm a community minister. I make space. Well, whatever your circumstance, it might be that you have to do full-time work after all. You need to feed the family and have a roof over your head, and that's perfectly right. Maybe you're in part-time work. Maybe you're one of those dads or mums who make the brave decision to not work so that you invest in your children. Those people, again, are gold dust, by the way, in our society. Because they are investing in people. There will be a long-term dividend for the whole of society by doing that. That's an aside off my main point. Maybe you're making yourself available as a volunteer. Whichever of those you're in, whichever space you're in, we can all adopt a new fourth habit. If we go to the next screen, and you'll find these on the sheets. They're in the new sheets, also in the baskets. We have at this church these kind of simple, we've had simple three habits. These go on top of the obvious ones of praying and reading scripture and taking part in worship. And remember, we've had the discipline of off. Of actually saying, no, I need to switch off so that I can commune with God, so that I can pray and be with God. And we've had the habit of sharing the walk. Do your discipleship with other people. Find one or two trusted prayer partners. Doesn't matter, they may not be part of his church. As long as they're people you can trust and give permission to challenge you and be open with. And pray with every now and again. Maybe 6 weeks, 8 weeks, once a term. I don't know. It'll depend on who you are, your friends. But find those people. Share the walk. Make a habit of it. And the third one is simply to always have this desire that no matter where you are, whether you're up, down, or in the middle, spiritually growing, want to be closer to Jesus. To strive to be ever closer to Jesus. Now, three habits is good. It's a nice number. Three is a good biblical number. And so I was very, very reluctant to add a fourth habit. But this issue of leaving space for Jesus to fill, I figured was so important that I'm going to have to break my rule of only having three habits and introduce a fourth one. The fourth habit is leave margin for Jesus. Space for him to fill. It might be in your day, in your week, a month, term. It will vary for different people. I can't tell you how to do that. But find a way of where there's space for Jesus. The discipline of off, that's a kind of an up thing. That's your relationship with God. The sharing the walk, that's an in thing, going together. The ever closer to Jesus is just to be closer to Jesus. And then the margin for Jesus is an out thing. Leaving space for Jesus to bring ministry. Maybe with people that you wouldn't otherwise meet or expect. And with that is our new key question. If we can go to the next slide, because we have a challenge as well. So with that, making margin for Jesus is an invitation. It's an invitation to Jesus to mess with your schedule. So ask yourself a question. Where might God want to mess with your schedule? And disrupt things in a good way. It will be good, honest. But allow him to disrupt. And so the challenge is that, of course, is just to leave space for Jesus to fill. And it's easy to say, but I'm sure when you go into your week, you will find meeting that challenge quite hard. Of just leaving some space for him to fill. Let me give you some examples. Karen and I, each Thursday morning, ahead of 2x2, our parent and toddler, we pray together, Lord, lead us to the chance conversations that you want us to have. The space is for you. Lead us to the right people. Another practical story of how this played out. This was several years ago, right? So long ago. It's actually before we had the food bank. And I was walking in town. And there was a guy, never seen him before, who was standing on the pavement saying, has anyone got any spare change? And like everyone else, I walked past him. I thought, I've got my to-do list back at my desk. Lots of things to do. I haven't got time for this, just like everyone else. I'll walk on by. But then, for some reason, something in my head just clicks and think, no, actually, stop, turn round, talk and ask. Park the to-do list for a moment. So I said, you know, what's the issue? What do you need? And he said, oh, I just need to get back to Chasseris. I haven't got any money. I just need my bus fare back to Chasseris. I said, okay, no problem. I can do that. And then I felt my back pocket and thought, actually, I can't do that. I haven't got any money in my pocket. So I said, well, no worries, because I do have my bank card. So I will go to a cash point. I'll get some money and I'll pay your bus fare. So I've got some money. But because I will not give cash, I will go to the bus driver, pay the fare on his behalf so that the person can get on and get home. So we said, let's go to the bus stop. Get to the bus stop, and of course, it's a bus to Chasseris. They don't run very frequently. And it's a 45-minute wait for the next bus. So it's like, okay, that's fine. Let's go to a coffee shop. We'll have a cup of coffee, and then we'll come back, and I'll pay for you to get on the bus and on the way, and it will work out. And so we went and bought this guy a coffee, and of course that gave us space to chat. And he opened up, explained about his life. I talked about me, myself being a Christian, and then all this kind of good stuff. And finished, oh, we better go for the bus now because we don't want to miss another one. Can I pray for you before we go? Yes, please. Pray for him, goes to the bus stop, pay the driver, off he goes. I have no idea what impact that will have had on this person's life. Never seen him again. The only impact I do know of is the impact on my to-do list and the ability to get it done that day. I don't know the impact on this guy, but I knew it was the right thing. A theological college in America conducted an experiment, and they got their students together and they split them into groups, and they asked them to do two things. First was to fill in a questionnaire. It was a questionnaire with questions designed to tease out their attitude of putting faith into practice. What they thought about faith and making it happen, putting it into actual on-the-ground practice. Questions that would tease it out. So they filled in a questionnaire. The second thing they had to do was prepare a short talk about a Bible passage. Fill in a questionnaire, prepare a short talk. But in devising this experiment, there are a few other twists. The questionnaire and preparing was done in one building. They were to deliver the talk in another building, the other side of campus. And to get from one building to another, they knew that all the students would take a certain route, and they primed that route with an actor halfway along on one of the walkways to act, pretend to be ill, lying in distress on the walkway. Okay, so they put this actor on the walkway, and then the other thing that they did is for some of the students, they filled in their questionnaire, they prepared their talk, and they said, now you've got to go and give it in building number 22, which is the other side of campus, but don't worry, you've got half an hour, so take your time walking, and then you can get there, and you might as well leave now, but in half an hour, give your presentation in building 22. The other half of the people, they said, actually, we've messed up this scheduling. Time is really short. You need to leg it to building number 22. Get there really quick because you need to deliver your presentation in just a few minutes. So off you go. Hurry along now. And so they did this and they watched which students noticed the actor ill on the ground. Which stopped to try and help him? Let me tell you, out of all the variables, from the survey, the questionnaire, they knew which students had an attitude of putting faith into practice, which it was kind of a more just in the head thing. Some of the students were asked to prepare a passage, the Good Samaritan, others different passages. Half of them were in a hurry, half were not. The only variable that made a difference to whether people would stop and help the person or not was whether they were in a hurry. If you asked to prepare, the Good Samaritan, but in a hurry, didn't matter. You would just rush past this bloke on the floor in agony, and go and deliver your presentation. But if you weren't in a hurry, regardless of how you filled in your questionnaire, regardless of what Bible passage you were going to speak on, there is a better chance you would stop and help the person. Only variable, are you in a hurry or not? There's a lesson there. Leave margin for Jesus. Make space in your schedule, in your time, in your day, your week, your month, your term, where you can say, Jesus, this is just for you. Fill it how you wish. Maybe he won't fill it. Maybe he'll give you the time off. That's fine. Or maybe it'll be unfold to be an amazing opportunity of ministry. Timothy made himself available. He made space on a cosmic life scale, if you like, by going on this open-ended mission trip. We may not all be able to do that, but we can make space in our schedules. The result of Timothy making space and availability is captured in verse 5 in this Acts 16 passage. The churches were strengthened and grew in number. In other words, kingdom life was seen across the region. Let's stand and pray and respond.